Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAR Football Show brought to you by AIB. On today's show we'll hear from Sean Kavanagh, Colm Kavanagh, Mickey Hart, Keith Higgins, Keane O'Neill and Tom Cribben. And if that's not good enough for you, we'll throw in some analysis as well from my two studio guests, Conan and Senan. Your names kind of rhyme, lads.
Cheers.
Senan, bit of a hangover there today.
No, not at all. Come you can now. See that. No, I'm fresh.
I didn't think you dub celebrated Leinster title. It's just a run
that's
of the mill.
That's very harsh. No, we respect them. And we have
oh,
to
see. You're not listening to Jim Gavin.
I know, that's why we were saying it.
They're not
we
the
go
same
with that
now.
Line.
For a supporter, no. Are they the same now anymore?
Conan, I've treated them. And I cherish them like an All-Ireland because at that time they mattered. As you yeah. know, it's your own one there yeah. as well. Same story. But it's run-of-the-mill stuff, as you mentioned. There's another one in the back pocket. What have you got, 10 and 11 years?
Yeah.
Does it have to? Of course it counts. It's a final, and I suppose at the end of the day, it's not written on the back of the medal who you bet, what score it was. You have it in your arse pocket.
You're out on a Sunday night one way or another.
Yeah. You better believe I'm on holidays.
Lads, I want to start off the show by talking about Sean Kavanagh. Respect to the great man. He is the great man. Still on the go. Still performing. I actually, strangely enough, I thought for the last couple of years the modern game was maybe a little bit too much for him. You know, with the legs that's needed, the speed that's needed, and he's pushing on. He's 33 going on 34. And, you know, to pull a performance like that at his age, when the game is looking like it's gone, 8-4 down, he's gone. They need to turn around. And all these cliches you need about your leaders, your captains,
yep.
like it's almost just the stereotypical captain's part. Drags the game by the scruff of the neck, pulls his team back into it. Two sensationally inspirational scores and Tyrone are Ulster champions.
Do you want an answer? You're after you summed it up. Next.
He is one of the all-time greats. There's no doubt about that. And when you look at him, he's gone from being an all-out action midfielder, attacking midfielder, to a full forward, beating Kerry nearly on his own in 08. Now he's a utility full forward / wing forward / midfielder. He plays everywhere and he scored his two unbelievable scores without even using his trademark jink yesterday.
I mean, you said it was just cliches, but it was a walking cliche yesterday.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And as a Derryman, it was harder and harder to watch as how well he was playing. Like, it was just, I mean, I wrote a piece on sportsshow.ie yesterday. It was, I grew up hating Sean Kavanagh because he was so good and he could do everything. And
he's not a hateful, he was never a hateful player.
He was never a hateful player, but he was so good. So that was enough to hate him as a Tyrone man. But like yesterday was, it just came out the field and decided I am taking this game. I don't want to say it, but by the scruff of the neck, and I'm going to carry us over the line. As you said, there were 4 points down, and what he did yesterday was unbelievable. I don't really mean he scores, but like, you know, I mean actually literally dragging the team up the field, and you could just see the rest of them sort of falling on the wall.
Yeah, because make no mistake, Senan, like all this thing like for leaders and on the field and off the field. And especially with Tyrone having such a young panel, for them to turn around, like I'm sure there was young lads saying, uh-oh, this is Donegal. But then to see their main man saying, hang on, this game isn't over. Like, you do take that lead.
Oxygen into the lungs. You could see it. It just reverberated around that Tyrone team. And that score that he got, I watched it again this morning. There was men hanging out of him. And to give it height, you know, everything, accuracy. And it breathed so much life into that their own team. And you could see him. And it meant, I think pre-match, watching his interviews, this meant so much to him, this Ulster title, or certainly the chance to win it. Because he said they'd won 3 out of 4 going into the 2010. They hadn't been back in an Ulster final. It was a new team. He was the leader. And for me, what sums him up is that he's evolved with the game. Like where he came from to what it is now. And the two words that stick out for me with Tyrone in general, and he sums it up, is flexibility. Your Matty Donnellys can end up anywhere. Your Kavanaghs can end up anywhere. The Kavanaghs can end up. They can. And because of that, subsequently, it's adaptability. And he's adaptable. Whatever's presented at their own team, they just have a massive aptitude for learning. We saw it in the second game against Cavan, how they went with the double sweeper, and they changed again yesterday. And it's no issue whatsoever. And Cavan sums it up for me. Like, we were pigeonholed into a position, maybe woolly, half forward, maybe half back if needs be. And that's it. This guy's evolved into a player that can do it anywhere.
Yeah. you see Colm Kavanagh, I interviewed Colm Kavanagh, we'll hear it in a little while, he used that word adaptability, and you have to be able to play everywhere. You see Colin McCarron, Michael Murphy, and he's coming up scoring a point. There's no real set positions, especially when these defensive teams play each other. You attack from everywhere because you need to create the extra men, you know, and it's just this all action. Everyone has to be adaptable to play anywhere on the field. Like Paddy McGrath is at full forward. We saw Conor McManus is at fullback. Aidan O'Shea is at fullback. Like
Danny Cummins was back defending yesterday.
The days of positions are long gone. So traditionalists are going to have to cry your eyes out because this is not what you want to hear.
Yeah. Oh, it was a beautiful game, wasn't it, though? Like what a match, you know. But like honestly though, I mean Kyle McCarron. Like, you know, you mentioned him there. He was marking Michael Murphy. He had a goal chance. He got inside. He came along the byline, sliced it wide. Yeah. I mean, it was just that the whole time. And I know people might be crying about that wasn't beautiful to watch or whatever, but there was such a... From that point of view, you could see players just coming up the pitch, everyone trying to make something happen in contrast to last week's Connacht final.
Yeah.
But, like, it was just... I always said it would look... It would feel so easy to play in that Tyrone team because there's always an option.
Yeah.
Always men running off your shoulder and all you have to do is pop it to the free man and go again.
Maybe not against Donegal. There was a few controversial incidents in it and I think the two black cards, like... Tyrone won that game against the odds. You know, Matty Donnelly's such a huge player for them and McShane was playing well in the first half and they went. Neither of them, in my book, deserve to go on black cards. Like, I mean, the Matty Donnelly one, like, I'm so frustrated about this. Anyone that has played the game knows that that wasn't a black card because Matty Donnelly had in his head he was coming out to do Will McHugh. He was going to rattle him, he was going to drive him into the middle of the next week. McHugh hangs onto the ball a little bit too long sometimes. Yeah. Matty Donnelly sized him up, saw him, was charging for him.
He was committed, Willie.
Yeah, committed. Yeah. Then McHugh hand passed off the ball. Immediately Matty Donnelly put his hands up. In the air.
Yeah.
But his momentum carried through. That's a yellow card. It's reckless. It's not a black card and it's not what the black card is for.
Yeah, you said it. I think it's for checking the run. That's what he was on. We know it's for trips and being dragged to the ground, but that's for checking the run. For me, that's not checking the run because we've played in positions where you know you give the ball overhead and you're going to be checked and you sort of get on with it even though you're disgruntled. He didn't. He was in the, as you said, he was in the air. McHugh came at him. Of course he wanted to let McHugh know he was there because you have to let, physically you have to let everyone know, particularly the key players. He had 3 points in the first half, McHugh, yesterday.
No, that was Ryan.
It was younger brother. So he had to let him know he was there. For me, big, strong side. It happens in matches. It's an Ulster final. Like, that could have changed that Ulster final for Tyrone. And for me, it certainly wasn't a black card. And when I saw it the first time, I was saying, look, he just... Maybe there was a little thing in the back of Donnelly's mind to say, I'm going to let McHugh know.
Oh, there was nothing big at the back of his mind. It was at the front of his mind. He had him sized up.
But he wasn't checking his run. No, clever.
He wasn't trying to check his run.
I don't think it was a black card either. And it annoyed me a bit. Some of the analysis on television anyway was just seemed to be brushing over it, saying, it's a black card. Let's move on.
And all three agreed with you. Yeah. This is something really annoyed me. I tweeted about it last night. The three lads on a Sunday game, you're talking about two wing backs and a corner forward. All different perspectives on the game. How can they all have the same opinion on these black cards, on these incidents? Like, surely disagree on something.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy just to roll with it. And it's the same as the Aidan O'Shea team for me last week. Everyone sort of rolled with it straight away rather than saying, let's analyse this, freeze frame and have a little look. And it's probably easy just to go with the flow. If you're stepping left and right, go left to centre.
Yeah.
You're putting your head in the parapet as a player and as anything to wear that here. And that's what happens.
There was another one a few years ago there when Owen O'Gara was accused of biting Mickey Burke that time in the Meade match. One of them said that there's nothing in that. And they all agreed. Now... he's just been accused of biting someone. Like, you know, you can't, just because someone says there's nothing in it, don't all agree. Someone surely might have thought, biting, if this accusation is true, this is a pretty serious offence.
At least play devil's advocate and encourage the debate.
Like, or maybe Des Cal needs to play devil's advocate. Like, I mean, it can't all be an agreement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the second black card, we might as well move on to McShane.
Well, McShane won, I didn't watch the BBC coverage, but I heard that they were saying that it was for verbal abuse, which, if that was the case, and it is in the black card sort of code that verbal abuse is punished by black card, but definitely again a trip. It's not cynical. He was up on the other team's byline. I don't see what advantage Tyrone were really getting there by Kyle McCarron tripping someone.
If it's verbal abuse, fair enough. If he's given a black card for that, he's really going textbook stuff because it was an instinctive just put his hand out. We've all done when you're on the ground, you do it. You're going to have to losing the ball. Well, I have to do something to get this thing back. Instinctively, he put his hand out. There was nothing cynical about that. And he barely caught him anyway. I think, who was it? Was it Thompson? He was falling over anyway. His momentum was gone. And he gets the black card for that. It didn't look like verbal abuse because he didn't run into the ref's face after the free was given and start giving the ref abuse. So I don't know.
I think the BBC reported that. But my thing on black cards is, black cards were brought in, the you know, the principle of the black card was 100% right. You know, stamp principle. Out this cynical play, and it came in after Sean Kavanagh, you know, yeah, with McManus, yeah. Mayo pulled down Dublin in, I think it was 2013 or 12 or 13 in a semi-final, just dragging them down.
Yeah.
There was too much of that going on.
Yeah.
Now, why not hold the black card until such incidents that are so obvious that there's no discussion, there's no debate about them? For example, Colin Boyle got a black card the weekend, just dragged his man down. He was true on goal. That's a black card. David Keenan pulled down, I think it was Comer, in the first half against Galway and Roscommon. Cynical. Comer was getting
down and goal.
Going in free. He'd shaken off a tackle. That's a black card.
Yeah.
Stop giving these 50-50 black cards, because this is what's ruining the black card. Use it for very, very obvious cynical play. Just the ones. Just these drag down. The professional fouls in soccer.
Yeah.
Called in soccer.
Absolutely.
Hold off on these silly ones. Like, it's not a cynical play to trip up someone in your own.
In your own. Yeah. He was going nowhere. That second he was going nowhere. Now, are the refs spooked?
I don't know. Or what's the message to them?
Well, we don't know what's going on. The referees, when they convene a committee meeting or whatever, they're saying, well, look, they put it up on the screen. Why didn't you give a black card there? Are they spooked? Is there someone, is Big Brother looking down on them that they have to just be very rigid and follow the rule book? Whereas what you're saying just makes sense. If it's cynical with a guy bearing down a goal, it's going to be a score. It's game changer. Then go for the black card. I don't know.
Yeah, and they're the obvious ones. And this is going to sit because there's a huge group of people now who are saying this black card isn't working, and I'm tending to agree with them now. When I want the black card to work because it serves a really good purpose in the Colin Boyle and Keenan situations, and we don't want to lose that from the game. But if they continue the way they are, it's just going to turn into a farce.
And you can see why they might be spooked, as Sennan says. Like on the Sunday game last night, they were talking about the Jim McConnelly incident, and they started saying that it should be a black card because it dragged him down. I mean, the ball was dead. I mean, fair enough. It might be in the textbook to say if you drag a man down, it's a black card. But how on earth is that contributing to why it was brought in the first place?
100%. That Dear McConnelly thing, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about it. That's a yellow card. It's not a yellow card for Dolan. It's a yellow card for Connolly. He reacted to a pat in the head. Absolute. It was probably the grade one provocation out of 10. Like, I mean, if Dear McConnelly's falling for that against Westmeath, God help him when Tyrone gets their hands on him.
Oh, you better
because,
believe it.
Like, I mean, I thought that was gone out of Dear McConnelly. But my theory on this with Dear McConnelly is Dear McConnelly has turned into such a brilliant player.
Yeah.
And he's respected countrywide now for his ability.
He's turned it around.
Yeah, but lads aren't really provoking him now. Because would you ever provoke Henry Shefflin, for example? You know, he's just so brilliant. You'd feel dirty saying to Henry, or annoying Henry, or even the Gooch, although the Gooch gets it a little bit. But Connolly's not getting it as much now because he's respected. It's still there in Connolly. I don't think Connolly can get that out of his personality. You piss Connolly off and Connolly will react. And there's Justin McMahon's message there. I'm sure he'll be watching it.
Connolly.
No, I was going to, that's what Tom Cribben said after the game. He said, like, listen, we're trying to get a reaction out of this boy. Like, you know, and you can see why you're saying lads don't provoke him, but maybe then, listen, Willie, if you were a manager of a team, would you not tell someone to go out and get a rise out of
him? Oh yeah, 100%. Like, there's no doubt about that. And it's Connolly's at his weakest when he's frustrated. Like, I mean, every player is, but Connolly especially. Connolly misses a score or two, and there's certain flashpoints in a game where you can kind of ignite that spark in Connolly. Like, you know, you can flip. You might take a punch for it, but he'll go off. And I don't think Connolly can ever get that out of him. No, you know, he's obviously, we know how brilliant he is, but that's there. That's always there.
So what you're saying is, we break it down, he's being managed well. Simple as. Jim has got that out of him.
He got it out of him, though.
No, sorry. It's innate. It's there. We know it. I've seen him in club football. He's sparky. And if he's targeted, and as you said, if things aren't going well, then there might be a reaction, because it's probably just simmering below boiling point. But we've seen him in matches, and even after he did that, when you watch the slow-mo, he's nearly on all fours trying to get out of this, because he starts saying, shit, I'm in trouble here. I need to get out of it here, you know, because it all kicked off around him.
But that's when the red mist goes. But when he's in the middle of that red mist, I'm not sure that logic is going through his brain.
But
there was a moment in the second half where him and Dolan were at it again, just before the kick out.
Yeah.
And you can see he's really putting his chest into Dolan, and he's loving it. Like, and he keeps putting his hands up as a referee looks over. But, you know, I don't know if you might take it out of him completely, because the ball comes out. Jim McConnelly climbs up with one arm. Takes the
beautiful
ball out of the sky. It was the best moment of the game. That's, you knew when that ball was kicked out, he was going to win that ball, because he was so up for it just based on this sort of flashpoint that he was having.
It doesn't affect his game anymore, really. If he got the yellow, right, let's taper this down and go again.
Yeah, alright. Well, I was up in Clonus, as you both know. Wasn't an absolute classic, and we'll get into analysing it in a little while, but an unbelievable outpouring of emotion with Tyrone. They really appreciated this win after maybe taking it for granted. I got down onto the field after the match and I spoke with Mickey Hart, Colm Kavanagh, and the man of the moment, Sean Kavanagh. Have a listen.
Mickey, that must be up there with one of the greatest wins of your... You've had a lot of good ones, but that must be right up there.
Yeah, it's very pleasing to have won that game. Not only to have won it, but I suppose the manner by which we did win it, because you could win a game on the front foot and maybe be 5 or 6 points up and coasting all the time. We were in the back foot for 80-90% of that game, and then we turned on the screw at the time, probably when people thought it wouldn't be us, we'd turn it on. So we've been waiting a long time for this win. I said all along at the press conference a few weeks ago, we weren't never far behind Donegal. Yeah. We were always in touching distance with them. Our turn had to come someday, as long as we kept trying our very best. And we have a class group of players at the minute. I am really proud of them.
It means a lot to the people of Tyrone. I've never seen you celebrate an Ulster title like this.
Well, that's it, you see. In 2000, I said that we got back-to-back titles in 2009 and 2010. Nobody cared a jot. And now you see what it means to them. Yeah. This is a real reality check for people to realise that Ulster titles are important. And they don't come around easy. And, you know, I hope this will be something to savour for many years to come. And there'll be a great appetite for another jolt of this next year.
You looked in big trouble there at half. Well, at half time you had two fellas on black cards. You don't know your thoughts on them, but then you went 8-4 down. You know, you looked in big trouble against a team with Donegal's experience.
Yeah, that may be so, but the win was significant, even though it didn't look like it in the crowd there. It was making the ball hold up for us. We had a lot of wayward shots in the first half, maybe bad shot selections, but at the same time, I think some of those shot selections would have went over under those goals. So we knew that we had played against the elements to a degree, and that if we stepped up our own performance a bit, we could take this game. Now, as the game went on, it was anybody's game. We probably were flattered maybe to be a 2-point win, because a 1-point win was enough for this game.
They struggled to get scores an awful lot more in the second half. You were hitting them on the break and getting scores a lot easier. They were struggling to get through you.
Well, that's the idea. I mean, they play a defensive setup. They make it hard for you break them down. You got to match that, and then you got to actually be good on the break. And it's not easy to be good on the break against Donegal, because they're very good at what they do. But at the same time, when you get class points like Sean Kavanagh kicked over there, even Rory Brennan to start the game off for us in the second half, Petey Hart's shot at the finish. I mean, these are just, and even Darren McCurry, who just came on to sub, that was no easy shot. No. He was under pressure, he was out quite a bit, but he's a class finisher. So things came right on the day, but I say it was in the hands of God, and Mickey Murphy was taking his free that could have put them one up at a very important time of the game. And I really did say to myself, this is in the hands of God, but God's Sean and us today.
Yeah, and last question, Sean Kavanagh, what more is there to say about him? You've been on the go with him for a long time. Like, that's like at his age, with the attritional nature of the game now, from to pull out a second half like that.
Without a doubt, I mean, that's why he is the player that he is. That's why he is, that he's recognised throughout the country of the man that he is. He is a leader, and he's been there, done it from he was 19 years of age. And I'm just so delighted that he's getting lifting this Anglesell Cup at this stage of his career, because nobody deserves it more.
Colm, that's a sweet one.
Yeah, absolutely. A few minutes ago, it didn't look that sweet. We had to dig in very, very deep there to get a result. And I think it's a great sign of our squad depth there. The lads are coming on, and with a good mix of experience and youth there, and just amazing to take control at the end there and get over the line. You know, massive character shown.
Yeah, when you talk about experience and character, you have to give the brother a bit of a mention there.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He dropped the ball too many times. No, look, he came up with the goods when the backs were against the wall and we needed a score from somebody. Sean's been there for years and has been doing that for years. It's fantastic to see that he can still do it, but look, it's so cliche, it is a team effort, and why a lot of men stood up today whenever our backs were against the wall, and you know, things weren't looking good, but we knew we had it in us to dig deep the second half, and you know, we knew the first half we didn't give a good account of ourselves, and you know, knew there was another 35 minutes to be played, so you know, happy to get there.
Yeah, was it a calm dressing room at half time, because you just lost two fellas to black cards? I wouldn't think it was, and you know, you were 7-4 down, so what was Mickey saying?
Look, it was difficult losing the lads. Like, Matty Donnelly's been probably our most influential player this year, and look, he's dug us out of many a hole this year. And you know, we thought we owed him that whenever he got black carded. Look, there was a bit of a mix of emotions at half time. There was a bit of calmness. There was a bit of uproar. But look, that's natural in any change room at half time, regardless of how the game's going. If you're winning by 10 points or losing by 10 points, there's always that mix. Everyone brings their own character at half time and brings their own charisma, so to speak, to say their piece. And look, it's done us well in the end.
You must have enjoyed that second half. You even got to fetch a few balls in midfield, something you don't get to do that in the modern game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always nice to go up and get one. I suppose the modern game, there's a lot of a focus on winning the kick out, whether that's short or, you know, you don't sit, there doesn't tend to be that many kick outs that come long anymore. But look, that's, you have to adapt to the game, and that's the way the modern game is, and you have to deal with that as a midfielder. And but look, happy whenever they come my way.
How would you describe your role in the team? You're kind of revolutionising midfield play. How would you, if you were to describe your midfield role, how would you describe it?
I haven't a clue.
Defensively minded, you might say.
Yeah, well, if someone was to put you in a classification, they would put you in a defensive minded midfielder. That's probably how you would sum it up. But I say, look, throughout any 70 minutes of a game, you could be anywhere. I've seen myself in the forward line there a few times today. Okay, I didn't get a shot off, but you can find yourself anywhere. And that is a modern game. You have to be able to adapt to any position and go anywhere. You know, whenever you're, say, 4 points down, there's no point flooding men behind the ball. You just have to adapt to every situation. And look, Donegal had us for long periods of time, and we knew we had to do something slightly different to try and get the scores and try and get over the line.
Sean, you're not supposed to have the legs to kick 3 points in a game like that in the second half.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. I hope the drug testers aren't here today. But special Willie, like, suppose whenever we need to go to the well, we kicked an awful lot of bad misses, first half in particular. But and obviously losing an inspirational player like Big Matty was always going to be tough. But we've been moaning on about the squad depth and all that, like most teams do. But I think whenever we really needed to go to the well in that second half, some guys really stood up and we get over the line. You know, the biggest part of the day was probably the grit and determination just to get over the line. It wasn't champion football, wasn't beautiful running football that we like to play. But look, there's going to be games like this, and every time we've met Donegal in these situations in the past 5-6 years, they've come out on top. So it's sweet to be able to, whenever the game was in the melting pot, to kick on the way we did. And you know, it's a special day in Clonus here for us all.
Yeah, what does winning the Ulster mean to you? Like, you've won so much and you won them so easily kind of in years gone by. To go 5 years without winning it was a huge outpouring of emotion, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, it's a bit strange. Whenever I remember sitting here in 2010 and thinking, oh well, look, it's another trophy, it didn't mean too much, it was just another step. But today, I suppose, and Ricky is captain, I suppose you grow up standing on the hill. I remember in 95 and 96 watching the Canavans and Adrian Cushes and Kieran Cowers of Tyrone do the business here in hot sunny days in Clonus. So it's just a dream for anyone to stand and to walk those steps and lift the Anglo South Club. You know, I've obviously watched Peter do it, I've watched Brian do her do it. I've played under some great captains, but to walk those steps and particularly whenever I know my career's coming to an end, it really did mean a lot.
You've hung on in there. You know, the team was in transition. A lot of the old fellas you battled with have all gone. You're still standing there. You know, you believed in these young lads and you believed that you'd be back.
Yeah, look, some people probably thought I was a bit mad the last couple of years. I've been saying that, you know, I could see a real nucleus of a real team coming. Like, and you only have to stand in Gervahi with these guys and to see the athleticism and the power and the skill that some of them have. Yeah. And I knew there's some fantastic footballers. And look, on days, some of the guys didn't really, you know, sometimes they don't have their best days. But I knew there was enough of us to form a real good team. And I think there is a good team coming. And look, whenever you're playing football, you see some of the stuff that next to Peter Hart can do there today. And it's nice to bring guys from the bench and for them to want the ball in tight positions in those last 5-6 minutes and to kick some crucial points. And that's just special to be part of the group.
Yeah, it is special to be part of the group, but you would be too modest to admit it though. You're 8-4 down. You know, there could be doubts running through all of your minds. You know, you weren't playing particularly well in the first half.
No,
so to score 3 points and bring your team back into it, you know,
at half time there was a bit of soul searching. We sort of looked at each other and goes, look, that's not good enough. Like, it's not good enough to score 4 points in a half of football on a hot summer's day in Clonus. Was pathetic, to be honest. And we're honest about that. We said, look guys, we've been brutal. We played Donegal's game in the first half. We allowed them to play the game, but whenever, I suppose, things opened up and we started we felt that maybe the younger legs and the athleticism that we had started to pour through, then that second half the spaces started to open up, and that's where we really started to go to town.
It's mad. They dictated the counter-attacks in the first half and you dictated them in the second half.
Yeah, look,
the way the game went, it was weird.
It was strange. Obviously, we didn't want it to be like that. We wanted to try and get the start and sort of play the game in our terms like we did in that second Cavan game. But fair play to them. Look, Donegal, they're a tough side and they're still there. And, you know, it'll take a serious side to beat them no matter where they play them. So, but
look, I suppose we've lost them so many times in these situations just to get over the line today, and such of a in front of 35,000 in Clonus on a hot summer's day is something that, you know, we're going to cling on to for a day or two. But, you know, we know now that we're almost back to the top table, and the real football starts now. We go to Croke Park, and you know, we go to Croke Park as a good side, and I think people are starting to recognise that. But we know that the real football only starts now, and there's a hell of a battle to be played yet.
Yeah, finally, Sean, you must be disappointed with your technique for that third score. You know, you skied it. You need a bit more control in those situations.
I swear to God, when I kicked that ball and it goes, nah, Sean, what are you doing? You dropped another in the keeper's hands, and I've no idea. It just kept going and going and going. And look here, I was delighted to see it hit over the net. I don't know who blew it over the net. It must have been somebody in the sky blew it over, but back here, it is an amazing thing just to see it go over and to get over the line.
All right, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh on Sean Cavanagh. He did sky it. It's not one of his best scores, but it didn't look, when it left his boot, I thought this is landing into the goalie's hands, but like it just completely it carried. And one thing that wasn't actually mentioned, Mickey Hart mentioned it there in the interview, is that there was a bit of a wind there. I didn't think it was significant, but when you see all the good scores that were kicked in that game, they were all down into that same goals. You know, the Ryan McHughes, the Peter Harts, the McNeilish, the Sean Cavanaghs. You know, they were carrying that little bit extra down into that goal.
Yeah, it didn't take away from any of the scores, though. Like, and that Peter Hart score was probably, I'd say it's the best score I've ever seen in an Ulster Championship match. Like,
because of the context. Away. Yeah.
Yes, all things considered, exactly, because
no
of the context.
No hyperbole here now.
But like, you know, it was all square. Donegal were on top. They had that free from Michael Murphy, which, as Mickey Hart just said, it was in the hands of God. Like, they could have went and lost that game. But then Peter Hart steps up and he had a quiet enough match by his standards. And that just, from downtown, as they would say in America, it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and maybe this is a feature of these really defensive games. We saw it the week before with Galway and Roscommon. It wasn't a great game to watch, depending on your preferences for Gaelic football, but there was some brilliant scores in it. And this one, like, I mean, Sean Cavanaugh scored 2, McNeilish scored 2, Peter Hart scored 3, Ryan McHugh scored 3.
Yeah.
Of the most unbelievable scores you're going to see. Like, really, because that's really the only way you can do it is kick spectacular scores.
Hey, that's Ulster football.
Yeah. But it's this, and it's now, I suppose, it's a massive tactic in our game, is if you're presented with a blanket defence, you punch a hole and you try to get the guy in the loop. You know, we're seeing screening coming into it now, you know, to make that, just give the 2 yards for your McNeilishes. Rory Brennan came up the park at one stage and kicked an absolute boomer. And if I can just back reference a bit, we talk about short kickouts and, you know, this sort of short game plan. Everyone, cornerbacks have to be able to shoot and score, because the game has evolved so much they end up the park. But for me, what summed it up was the scoring from distance, the shooting from distance. I mean, so that game was in Clonus, yes. Yeah. Clonus is very deceptive now, because we played there once, and I always look when I was growing up looking at the Anthony Tolles kicking 45s over the bar at ease, and then we went and played there. You're one step inside the 45 and you're in the scoring zone, Willie. Yeah. You go to Croke Park, you're one step inside at an angle, you still have a big shot to go, you need to rob 2 or 3 more yards. You get that impression?
Yeah, no, it is. And it's to do with the backdrop, it's to do with what's behind the goals.
Okay.
Like, for example, did you ever play in Mullingar and there's a Dunstores one and there's apartments on the other end, and you just don't know your bearings on that pitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, and that's what I think, when you talk about the Dubs in Croke Park, and I'd obviously have it in a Moor Park, I've played there so often, you know where your range is, you know where your scoring range is. And that's what home advantage, I think. That's when you want to sum up what home advantage is. You know, there's a few different things. But knowing your range and knowing the distances, and like, because it's all 45 metres.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of them look like, I'll swing on over from here, absolutely no problem. It's Dunstore's fault at the back of that.
That's your biggest mistake there is comparing yourself to Anthony Toho. Come on.
Well,
it's very harsh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I just said watching them.
But like, at the game, I tweeted out from the Sports Show Twitter account that this is not going to be a classic. And you could just tell immediately, because we talked about the Donegal attitude in against Monaghan and how attacking they were and how many men they were committing forward. Not on the occasion.
No.
And you just could see it. Donegal leaving 3 men back, absolutely spooked by the Tyrone counterattack. And Tyrone, like, the very same, completely spooked about the counterattack. And this was back, we thought the game was moving on in Ulster to, you know, a more attacking style. Absolutely not today or yesterday. That's just the way that both teams set up. It was always going to be low scoring. 2 sweepers on both sides. And not just the 2 sweepers. It was more the fact that they were only sending, they weren't sending that many bodies off. Tyrone in the second half did.
They had to commit because they were behind.
They had the legs, yeah. Weirdly enough, one with Donegal in the second half is they were 8-4 up. Right, Tyrone were obviously 4 points down, but they had so many men behind the ball. And I was thinking with Donegal, you've got about 7 spare men around midfield. Just pass it to each other. Make Tyrone come out. You said it. Take the ball off you. It's not your responsibility to be forcing these games. Because Donegal ran out of ideas completely in the second half.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Conor. Don't worry, you would.
The flip side of that is
the crowd would start booing. I know that. But that's not Donegal's responsibility.
It's a win at all costs.
I completely agree. But, you know, I sat here on Thursday saying that Westmeath should do what Derry did to Dublin in the league last year. And, like, you know, people weren't too happy about that. I mean, I completely agree. If you're 4 points up, then why not? Just, like, you do not need to force the game. Bring them out. But the crowd will start booing. I'm not sure Donegal should necessarily care about that, but I'm just playing devil's advocate here. That's what will happen then. People like yourself, Ollie, might come out and say that this is not good to watch.
The reason I wouldn't is because it's Tyrone's responsibility in that second half to try and force the game. They're the ones down. So, like, Donegal have got their lead. Tyrone were putting 30 men behind the ball with a 4-point deficit.
Yes.
So, like, I mean, I would have said Donegal would have been well within their rights to just play it 1-2s around the midfield and make all the Tyrone extra bodies push up, then launch your attack. Mm.
And what's surprising for me is what I associate with the Donegal team, probably no Jim, was they'd always go into lockdown. If Donegal got ahead, you wouldn't make up a 4-point deficit at all. Yeah. If you 60 minutes of football, they just go into lockdown. But we're not associating that with this team here. And the aggressive edge that Tyrone brought in that second half, and the aggressive running, I suppose, from deep, just punching holes, and the willingness to shoot from distance, summed up by Peter Hart's shot, but it happened to Sean Cavanagh, lower piece. That willingness to commit and change emphasis a little bit as well at half time. I'm sure Mickey Hart came in and said, this isn't working, we need to. Owen McHugh was picked up in the second half.
Ryan and Peter Hart. I think the Sunday game got that wrong, because I was at the game.
Okay.
And Peter Hart and Ryan McHugh lined up against each other in the first half, and they marked each other in the second half.
Okay.
Ryan McHugh destroyed Hart in the first
three
half.
3 points.
Peter Hart destroyed McHugh in the second half. You know, so it was a brilliant battle.
Yeah.
And almost like their team's fortunes depended on how well both of those players. And we called that last Thursday. I don't want to brag about this in Colin, but we did.
Maybe we can play last Thursday's show there for
a bit of audio, yeah.
Hear how wrong we got it. But just to pick up on what you were saying there, were we really expecting anything different from what we got in the first half? In that match, it was a final after all.
I think we were more hoping than expecting, because, you know, because the two semi-finals, and Donegal had showed that attacking edge against Monaghan, you know, against the two sweepers, I kind of hoped that they might commit more bodies forward. But literally after 3 or 4 minutes, you could see, right, okay, this is back to what we're used to with Tyrone.
It was risk-free nearly for Donegal.
Completely risk-free. Yeah. And I think Donegal, like, we'll get on to talking about Tyrone in a minute, because, like, I suppose they're the story of the day, the way they turn things around. But Donegal kind of played into their hands by, you know, trying to attack them, getting turned over, and Tyrone breaking on them. And it was like, honestly, I just thought Rory Gallagher, get the message in there, draw them out.
Mm.
Why would he not have done something like that?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. And if you're to compare the management styles of Jim and Rory, there's a couple of little things that are quite different. And one thing that Jim had, and it was key to what Donegal did when they counterattacked, when they got space in front of them, was they always had a man ahead of the ball, Willie. That was one thing that was huge. That if you went in the burst, I'd burst past you ahead of the ball. The next man was ahead of the ball. We're not seeing that from this Donegal side. I thought they're waiting for the man coming off the shoulder, and that's already given Tyrone room to get back. And then they're just met with banks of 3 or 4 Tyrone men the whole way. And it's hard to punch holes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're just allowing runners to be tracked back the whole time. And I don't know. It's a big call. So it's not like they didn't know or expect this. I'm sure Jim Gavin, yes, he expected Westmeath to set up. Rory would have expected that to happen in the second half, and you have to be able to change emphasis at some stage in the game and make that call from the sideline, and maybe that comes from a training pitch.
They seem to run out of ideas completely. Like, how many times were the cameras picking up Donegal just kind of aimlessly passing it
lateral
45 laterally?
Yeah.
Nobody injecting a bit of pace in. But I suppose when McElhenney a couple of times tried to inject pace, and he's just running into three lads and then he's just desperately trying to throw it back out, and it's kind of scrambles back out to somebody else. And Tyrone, like, I don't want to use the word intensity, but they were hands-on. Mm. Like, the hands-on.
In the second half. Yeah, urgency.
And it was almost like, right, is Tyrone a strange crowd? Like, I've played with them out in New York twice. Like, they're mad. And those two black cards, I can imagine that dressing room at halftime. They would have been tearing the paint off the walls. Like, as in, this is the spark we needed. Our main man, Matty Donnelly's gone. And, you know, you can imagine the speeches now. You know, the hair would be standing on the back of your neck saying,
baiting the door down to get out.
It was a completely different team.
Yeah.
Hands on, turnovers, break. That's their game plan, and that's what you know they're able to do in the second half.
Yeah, I can't believe they let you play with Tyrone in New York. That's what worries me. You got away with it.
What I'm more surprised about is they brought me back out the following time.
Heard of something right, Jeff?
Perfect.
An absolute mouthpiece.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
A sledger.
Yeah. No, but you're right. You can imagine. And I said Mickey Hart is the tactical masterclass we talk about. Is he that good in the change? I don't know him that well to say he is that good in the change, but he must be. We can only look at the hard and facts. He can change things up at any stage. He can get the best out of players. He can look at two different Tyrone teams on any given day. You look at two different teams, the team doesn't perform first half and does it look like All-Ireland champion second half, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
It's funny you talk about Anthony Toohill. There was a Ulster final back in the 90s where he had lost to Donegal the year before and they were coming to play them. And apparently some of the headlines during the time were calling Anthony Toohill a big fairy. And, you know, apparently they were walking out at half-time and they were losing again. And Eamon Coleman turned to Toohill and said to him, you know what they called you last year? And then that was that. Apparently, yeah, you know, that was that. Toohill just became a completely new man. But, like, you've seen it for the last 13 years with Mickey Hart. Like, he's a lovely fella. Like, absolutely lovely. But, you know, there's a little bit of nastiness in there as well, and a will to one. Like,
100% there is. Like, I don't think we see the real Mickey Hart. Like, he's such a gentleman, and he's a huge character in the game. But, like, I mean, I would not like to get Mickey Hart's bad side.
No chance. There has to be that. That rootless streak is definitely there with him. Yeah, and even when you look at the teams he picks, the guys are left on the bench yesterday, you know, the guys are coming in changing games. He's not afraid to make the big decisions, and that's what's count. We played him. I don't. The Owen Mulligan. Remember the Owen, the master goal he got that day. The club where he dummy solo twice.
What were you thinking?
Yeah.
Come on. You know, nobody there.
Nobody there. There's nobody there.
Someone needs to take a black card there.
Yeah, you better believe it. And at half time in that game, I think we were something like 3 or 4 points up, and we turned again. This is it. We have Tyrone bet. They made 9 changes between personnel and moves. So there's guys going out going, I remember saying to Colly Moran, Colly, you have Peter Jorgan in your pocket. He goes out, and I think Jorgan's been corner forward or something. That's the thing they're going. He goes, what's going on here? Game is over. You know, in the mind already, the game is over, and then it turns. That's the time. And that's, we talked about flexibility and adaptability. That's what Tyrone have, Willie.
Yeah, Tyrone definitely started that. McGuinness kind of brought it on to a new level. But Tyrone were packing their defence back in 2008. Yeah. They frustrated Kerry in that final. You know, there's no doubt. One thing about, like, kickouts are such a big part of the game now. And In the second half, Donegal kind of went desperate and started going long. Well, maybe they didn't go desperate because they were going long right throughout the year, but they had Rory Kavanagh taken off. Their only target man was Murphy. Yeah. And Colm Kavanagh had the beatings of Murphy in the air. So, you know, their option to go long was kind of gone, and Tyrone were putting a lot more pressure in the second half on their kickouts. And Donegal, I think in the second half, Tyrone had 16 shots to Donegal's 6. Like, I mean, this is a domination. It was a domination. The minute Tyrone got their tails up, you know, you could see the writing on the wall for Donegal. But, you know, the kickouts are so important that they were kind of conceding in the first half. It was weird. Tyrone were pushing maybe 5 lads up on the kickouts. Like, it's kind of half doing and it's not really doing it, because the 5 lads push up, and then it's very hard not to, it's very hard to cover 2 men. So they'll go short, and then the Tyrone lads will run back down. Like, that's not committing to do one thing or the other.
Yeah.
I think, in fairness to the Rory Gallagher as well, I mean, when you are taking off men like Kavanagh and Thompson, it shows that, you know, these players are maybe reaching the end, and they're not where McGuinness had them, where they were flying, hitting their peaks. So he's a bit hamstrung like that, and there was no need to Gallagher yesterday. There was a moment where the ball came out and the commentators were saying 3-on-2 here for Donegal. Just one Tyrone lad went up, one lad stayed down and caught it. And you did say it, in fairness to you as well, on Thursday, Willie, that Mickey Hart is a master of these kickouts, and that's exactly how it panned out.
Mickey Hart smiled at me when I asked him about that last Thursday. Like, I said, you will spoil them in midfield. You want them to go long. He went, well, we'll have to see how the game pans out. Like, that's Tyrone's bread and butter, is that kind of thing. And it was a strange one, because McNeilish isn't a fetcher. He doesn't know in catching ball. Murphy's not really a fetcher either. He's too big of a man to get up there. So they were kind of stuck when they decided to go long.
And you said earlier on, Willie, we were both talking about the Donegal forwards and McBurney and Murphy. Was it 2 shots each that they had?
Yeah, I mean, 2 shots from open play in the entire match. What? Murphy and McBurney.
I mean, that's not on, really. Like, if you only won a championship,
you're stellar forwards.
Yeah.
Now, we know what are going to be snuffed out and they're being targeted, but come on. And again, I talk about changing emphasis. Does McBurney not come out in the loop, start getting shots? If he's pigeonholed in the corner, he may forget about
it. Yeah, he's gone. Yes. Him and Murphy were in there for a while, but they had Justin McMahon and Colin Kavanagh standing right in front of him. And their 2 men were marking him. A kicking game is a waste of time with those tactics. End of story. There was no kick passing forward. The only kick passing in the game was when they'd work the ball to the 45, realised there was no way through, so they'd just kick it back to midfield and maybe move it to their side of the field. And Like, that's just the reality of playing those systems. Kick pass, and that, I think that's the pity. Like, we won't get into this big conversation, but, you know, very little kick passing in these games. But you'd have to say, on the evidence of yesterday, Tyrone, while Mickey Hart didn't want to admit it last year, the confidence they're going to get from, you know, turning over Donegal, who are a top-tier team. Like, Tyrone had been beating Division 2 teams all year. The confidence they're going to get from turning around at double scores in the second half. They're a really young team. You know, only Sean Cavan, I'd say, was even played in an Ulster final before yesterday. Well, Colm Cavan as well. Not many of their starting team did. Like, this going to bring them on a lot. And now the potential inferiority they had to Donegal, that's gone.
Yeah.
And not just gone, it's been blown out of them,
yeah. And you see these Tyrone under 21 stars that won the All-Ireland last year. Was it McGeary got the last score as well? Would you try that in an Ulster final your first time? You're a point down, you lose, that goes wide, kick out the other end and you're being castigated. The confidence that they're bringing to the Cavanaghs and the guys that are there as well, it's certainly a team that's here for the ages again.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think we're looking at real All-Ireland contenders. All right, hope you all know we have a hurling show too.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go on, so.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are in there. We're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The Dublin juggernaut continued on yesterday in Croke Park. Conan was there. Conan mustn't have been that many Leinster matches. He was excited at halftime. He thought it was going to be a huge shock on the cards. He was ready to write up this huge kind of report. We have a new kid on the block in Leinster. This is how all Leinster championship matches kind of go. This is the same narrative.
I already had the headline written and everything. Yeah. I'll tell you what it was. It was Westmeath finally proved Dublin are only human. and you know what? It's lucky it didn't go any further. Like, I've done this before at different workplaces, of course. I would never do it here. But you start actually writing the report at halftime, and it's completely got switched around then in the second half. But by that stage, you've already started praising the team who've gotten hammered. You're like, you know, yeah, they can still take positives out of this. And you've gone too far down the road.
Yeah, you could write that match. I could have written that match report before the game started. Spirited first half from Westmeath. You know, frustrated Dublin. Dublin learned at halftime, came out, blew them away. That's the way they all work. Would you talk to Tom Cribben afterwards, who was very honest, as always? So have a listen to this.
We played our zonal system slightly different. We went man-to-man with our six defenders on their six forwards, because we realised with the zonal thing that Conley's still able to get, no matter who he plays, 4 points, and Paul Flynn will kick a few. And so we knew we needed two sweepers, but we went man-to-man on the six forwards. And, you know, probably with McCarthy out, their two half backs don't attack quite as much as Jack McCaffrey used to, and, you know, and just in the middle they don't kick many scores. All their scores come from forwards, and we probably needed to have a second game plan for the second half, because that's what you need. You need an element of surprise. You have to come with some different questions, because when a manager looks and he needs to make changes and counteract what's been thrown at him, it's very difficult to run out and tell one or two players on the pitch and make it happen. You need to get them into a dressing room, sit them down, show them what's happening, and show them the counter-attacking plan, you know? Because we could see, Keane come back, wing back, and they had seven forwards, and they changed it around straight away. But you need to be able to talk to five or six, your defenders all at once. At that stage, we nearly needed to go zonal the way they were pulling us, but it's very, very difficult to get that message out from the sideline once the game starts, you know. So he got the element of surprise in the second half. They're doing too much good work at underage. They have super coaching structures in place. They have structures in place and have learned now they'll only get better. The rest are going to have to get up to them. They're not going to come back. If people are codding themselves and think this team is going to fall away in a year or two or three, like, they're codding themselves. Everyone else is going to have to get up to their standard, you know. And it can be, it's not all about money, like everyone says. You know, it's, you have to coach at underage. Look at Kildare, that's three Leinsters in 4 years at minor level. And that's where you have to start the work. They are doing the work at underage, and everybody knows that. So this isn't rocket science, you know. You have to bring them up winning at underage and carry it the whole way through and have a panel big enough developed. But Dublin won't come back. They'll only get better.
Yeah, interesting enough from Tom Cribben there, he's talking about they went zone, or they went man for man in their six defenders in the first half, right? So at halftime then, Jim Gavin made the change. He took off Lowndes. Is that how he
Lowndes and put in Kieran Kilkenny.
And brought in Paddy Andrews put Kieran Kilkenny back in the half back line, which is a brilliant move. Mm. Like, should I even call it a brilliant move? It's just an obvious move. But like in the GAA world, that's a brilliant move.
And it's not upsetting. It's not upsetting anything not that upsetting. Dublin bring. Yeah.
Absolutely not. But Tom Cribben said that the problem with Croke Park was when they saw that move, was getting the message out to their players to maybe change and go a little bit zonal and cover areas rather than cover their men. Okay. Like they said, they were a little bit... Jim Gavin surprised them at half time and they couldn't really get the message out to their players. Whether, you know...
Surprised them.
Well, you don't often see Dublin do it, to be fair, but like, no. I mean, you should be.
Yeah, and it's a nice tactic going forward, but Westmeath were probably affording them that as well. Like, will a Kerry or a Tyrone allow Dublin to play with seven forwards? Not a chance. If Kilkenny goes back in wing back, he'll be playing wing back, I'd suggest.
Yeah, I think against Tyrone, he probably will get away with it. Mm. You know? Mm.
Against a lot of tracking to do them.
A lot of tracking.
Now, he does put in a lot of hard yards, and that wouldn't faze him, I don't think.
But there was one thing about playing in Croke Park. I can kind of understand it. Like, you'll send in maybe the water boy to tell one player. He has to spread the message down to him. And he's got enough on his plate to be marking his man. Like, I remember when a roar goes up in Croke Park. I'd be wing back or wing forward, you're shouting to the centre back, centre forward, something, and they can't hear you.
Not a chance.
Like, there's so much
you cannot
so much
communicate
noise.
Yeah.
So like, maybe Tom Cribben has a point that it's actually very difficult to change a system so as big as going man for man to zonal without actually taking a time out and calling six players over and going, this is what we're doing now.
It's a signal.
It's a
signal that's done in training. Conor, you think about it's something you've done and you've worked on, and when you see that move happening, then everybody knows, because it's not in Croke Park. When Pillar took over us, when we were playing A's against B's matches on the sideline in St David's, those selectors were going mad, roaring stuff in. He said, lads, shut up. They won't hear you in Croke Park. Nobody will hear you in Croke Park. Yeah. So then it was just silence on the sidelines against these A's and B's matches. Sorry for cutting across.
Well, I was going to say that's nearly exactly the point. I think when you see a manager or a coach jumping up and down the sideline, it's nearly a sign that they're maybe not prepared. And if they were surprised by what Dublin done, it's sort of like Westmeath should have, like the players themselves like should be organising that, and like, but it looked like they got completely sort of spooked by it as well. And you could see that there was a sideline. This is where the first Dublin score came from in the second half. But because there was an extra man pushed up, because there was sort of a bit more disjointed, they didn't know who was marking who. No one showed for the ball, and I'm not sure who was taking the sideline, but he had no options, and he ended up just kicking it to Bernard Brogan. Dublin scored. They scored from the kick out, and it was just game over. Then 3 points, and Dublin are rolling. But that's where you need players to start organising things themselves. I mean, I've played. The only highest standard I would have played would be against Ballanderry, but even then, it's like, Jesus, these lads are actually talking to each other. You know, whereas we're always sort of hiding and looking to blame the manager if something goes wrong, and nearly not wanting to fix it because you think you've got that excuse behind you. Then, but these lads are actually talking, saying you're going there. They're playing a sweeper. You're pushing up, and they're sort of doing the organising on the pitch.
We saw that in the Laois game with Dublin. There was an injury early on. Keane O'Sullivan brought all. Did you see that, Willie? Keane O'Sullivan brought all the defenders in. Everyone was close into a circle, and he was communicating the message straight away. And then they broke again back into their positions.
Yeah,
and
it is someone go down injured or something. Have a signal for someone to go down. Then whoever the runner is, go in and gather the defenders together.
Get your message.
And let's get your message. So I suppose maybe now that we've discussed it, Tom Cribben's talking shite there.
Well, I said, like, you can hear him like. He was talking before, just before that audio we played beforehand. He said, you know, you need to be prepared in the second half for a change. You need to surprise them. But he was saying this in hindsight, knowing that he hadn't done it. So it was like, why didn't you sort of do that then? It was like he had just learned again. You know, like Jim Gavin had schooled him yet again in the second big day.
Yeah, the one thing about Dublin is, and we talked about it last Thursday, is they're just... Like we said, they were shocked in 2011. They're no longer shocked with this. Like, you know, they'll start off a little bit rusty, but they'll just learn as the game goes on. And again, their superior fitness, because they're close to professionals as you're going to get in the GAA, Senan smiling, but they are. And, you know, Westmeath are not at their level of physicality, strength and conditioning, or physical fitness. Westmeath would really need to do at half time to have any chance there is to take off their two sweepers and take off their half forward line. And bring on five fresh players. Completely invigorate the whole system. Mm. Because if they're using the two sweepers as offensive sweepers, take the game to Dublin completely. I don't care how well they're playing. They cannot have the legs to play the level that the half forward line and the two sweepers need to match defence and attack. So take them all off at half time and bring on five lads. But Westmeath, do Westmeath have
they
those
don't
five
have the strength depth, yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
But really, I think that's the only way to try and beat Dublin is to change one third of your team at half time. Now you're running the risk, obviously, of an injury then, and you're in trouble. Yeah. Maybe not five, but four. It has to be reinvigorated. Yeah. Yeah. Because like teams are just running out of legs. And,
yeah.
You know, the energy and, you know, the willingness to get up and down the field in the second half, that all seems to go, and Dublin just find the holes and the game's over. We've seen it, so Colin, yeah. You haven't seen it as many times in person, but it happens all the time in Leinster.
I mean, yeah, but it's funny, like, and James Dolan and Dennis Curran, they were the main sort of protagonists nearly for Westmeath and actually taking the game to Dublin. None of us would take them off at half time, like, you know, because they were playing so well, and you're probably looking at the subs bench thinking, you know, is there anybody else here to do that job? It's funny, I always remember sitting on the bench one time and a manager turning around looking at us and saying, bench is giving me nothing, hey, I've got nothing on the bench, and all those lads just sitting looking back at us thinking, well, we're not going to be used here, but like that's probably the case for Westmeath there. Like, you know, obviously they've got a better panel than what we had, but like I wouldn't be taking any of those players off if they're starting against Dublin.
It'd be some statement, wouldn't it? If you can you imagine, so it'd be a massive statement for Tom Grimm to do it. He takes off these guys and puts in, if he had the strength and depth in his panel, and the guys that are coming in, you're coming on at half time. It doesn't matter, you're coming in. It's like a fresh game for you. You get your mindset, your psychology, everything prepared around that. Watch what's going on the first half. Change it up, and it'd be a serious statement
by
any manager.
Something like this needs to be done, because nothing's working against Dublin with these defensive systems. And the reason these defensive systems are not working, because they're getting tired. If they work for a while, why can't they work the whole way through? Because they're getting too tired.
Yeah.
The constant grueling, you know,
it's attritional. It's grinding.
The
dubs
running at you in waves. You're tired. You can't track those runs you could. But five new fresh lads.
Might.
There you go.
Yeah.
And just lie about a blood sup.
Yeah.
give them a blood tablet. There you've got six.
But why don't they do then what we were suggesting on Thursday, where they just hold the ball, like what we were saying Donegal should have done in the second half against Tyrone? Just hold the ball. Don't go at them. Save your energy. Let them run around. Run the clock down.
Yeah, but Dublin will push up on you there. Like, I mean, Dublin won't.
They'd love
Dublin
it.
Won't
big
that
pitch.
To happen.
It's a big pitch. And if they do push up, I mean, they'll have to push everyone up.
Yeah,
they do that.
Here's one thing I want to establish here, because I heard Kieran McGeaney on Off the Ball talking about it yesterday, and he says Dublin play the same as Tyrone. Like, I know, they do not. Dublin do not play full time sweepers. They play Keane O'Sullivan, who's a centre back who only holds his position.
He holds his position. If the 11 goals.
Like, if you play 15 or 15 against Dublin, Dublin will not play a sweeper. Dublin will play it as you are. So you cannot say they're like Tyrone, who play with full time sweepers. Yeah. That's number one.
They're not dropping 10 and 12 as soon as the ball is thrown in. They don't run back and deploy a double sweeper.
Like,
okay.
At stages of the game, Dublin will have 13 behind the ball, but that's only natural. Like,
they're tracking runners, Woolley, because it's slow build-up.
Like we said, Cottle McCarron's attacking from everywhere. That's the way games have gone now, especially with defensive teams. They're attacking from everywhere. I think it's completely wrong to say Kerry and Dublin play a real defensive. They do not. You have a great opportunity with Dublin and Kerry. If you go along to midfield, fetch the ball, you will find one-on-one matchups in the full forward line. 100%. You will not find that against Donegal or Tyrone. So to compare the two, like, you can't kick pass against Tyrone or Donegal. 100%. You look at Galway Roscommon yesterday. They didn't play full-time sweepers. Beautiful kick pass.
Outside of the boot every time. Yeah, beautiful
stuff. Like, that's lovely to watch. But, like, I mean, that's because they're filtering back rather than leaving them back.
You
their
said
And there has to be a different... this has to be differentiated between... You know, these defensive systems.
I thought it had, Woolley. No, do people not know looking in and saying, oh, but Dublin now have 13 behind the ball?
I don't think so.
Surely to the untrained eye, even that makes sense. They're tracking running. If Bernard Brogue is back, he's tracking his man. He can't let his man go and pop it over the bar.
He doesn't want to be back there.
And he doesn't. He's going to foul anyway because it's a lazy owl there.
But who are these Dublin sweepers? Like Flynn, Kilkenny, Connolly, Rock, Brogan.
That's
what I
mean.
Give me a break. Yeah. Like, I mean, if the manager was playing those guys as sweepers, they should be sacked.
Exactly.
So, like, I mean, that's just the way it goes. And, like, there's no doubt. One thing to finish up on this is another thing Tom Cribben said is that Dublin have their house in order. It's up to every other county to catch up. Now, a couple of issues I have with that. Dublin have their house in order. Dublin have a system where they have the financial capabilities to have commercial directors, assistant commercial directors. They have the marketing side of their whole operation nailed. Mossy Quinn's in there and he's not even the main man. You've Brian Cullen over the whole strength and conditioning. They have 13 sponsors. You only need to go on their website. You have 13 different sponsors. Laois would be lucky to get a sponsor to give them 70 grand. Dublin have millions, millions and millions. So to think that this every other county need to come up to Dublin's level, how can they? They don't have the money to do that. They're putting so much money into their senior football teams trying to compete with Dublin's backroom team, which is probably the most professional in the whole country, that they don't even have anything left to worry about their underage structures. Like Kildare have money, more money than other counties, and they're getting their underage a little bit kind of in order. But like, I mean, the idea that Dublin are going to, this is cyclical, and Dublin dominated in the 70s, they're dominating again. Dublin are never going to drop their level. They've got everything structurally correct. You're doing coaching, sending, they have a lot of ex-players coaching. They just have it perfect. And that's not fault in Dublin, but they've the resources to do it, and they've the brain power to do it. The Costello's,
and like, exactly, the money's in the right hands. Yeah,
money's in the right hands. But like Laois, for example, Westmeath, I don't want to keep mentioning Laois because I'll be called biased.
Yeah.
Every other county in Leinster do not have a professional running their county board. They have volunteers.
Okay.
So how is this a level? You know, it's not a level.
It's not a level paying for it. No. No, and there's a couple of things with that. And where people don't understand where all this came from. It was a vision 20 years ago within the GAA and the Dublin County Board to keep Gaelic games alive in the city. And basically what they were going to do, they were going to target clubs and primary schools and the nurseries and clubs. That's where all this came from 20 years ago, to try, because the competition from rugby and soccer was huge. The DDSL, the Dublin District Schoolboys League, was the biggest per capita soccer league in the world, per capita now, in the world. That's what we were talking about. In my area, we've Kevin's, we've Home Farm, we've Stella Maris. That's the competition you have. So they targeted the area to get your GPO in. You get every kid playing the game. Now, I'm just giving you a little bit of history of it. I teach in Cabra. You go through Cabra there. There's kids walking around with Hurleys and they're now filmed by the tracksuits. This is in a hard working class area.
Yeah.
So it's worked. That's where it came in its infancy. Obviously, it is just, it's a monster now as well, because once there's success breeds success, and everyone, all the commercial sponsors want to come on board when Dublin are doing well.
And they have that natural advantage of being the biggest, the capital of the country, the biggest population. Sponsors want to get on board. Sponsors don't want to get on board in the other country.
You said,
like,
it,
I mean,
yeah.
So should that sponsorship money be shared or distributed?
Yeah, 100%.
Get handouts from the Leinster Council.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece exactly with that headline in it a couple of months ago on SportsU. Just it's time for inter-county sponsorship to be pulled and divided out equally, because it's not professional, for one, but number two, Dublin aren't getting it necessarily because they're the best. It's because they've got the biggest population, and it makes more sense for people to sponsor Dublin. Of course they should, but if you even just look at Leitrim Bush Hotel, Dublin AIG, that's just on their shirts. You know, and how can you compete with that long term? Right now that it's actually marketing's come on so much and people realize that there's big money here, they sponsor in the capital, but it shouldn't just be going to Dublin, it should be going everywhere.
Yeah, that's in the interest of fairness, but I mean, you look at the championship structures, you look at all these things, there's nothing really within the GAA that seems to be fair.
Now, the other thing on this, and Jim has said it, and I don't know it's going to happen, and you mentioned all the volunteers down in Laois and Westmeath. You need to start sitting down and banging heads. Jim Gavin has said it. There's a template there. It's no problem. You can all come in and have a look at this template. Sit down with guys that are clever people. But there has to be clever people, Laois people, Westmeath people, Derry people, around the world that are willing to come in and help. I'm not saying help out the football team. Help out everything around GAA in the county. Jim will tell you, Jim McGinnis said that. He tapped into a lot of people around the world that were just interested in Donegal. Go with your business plan. You go to Croke Park. You go with your targets and say, look, this is where we want to be in 10 years. But we need €2 million. Croke Park should be nearly paid for by now, isn't it? No, it has to be money floating if you can go with a template and a business plan. Yeah. And it's not money that we all heard that article about where the money was going in Hurling a few weeks ago. We read that article and, you know, was it €1 million and it was just going into the wrong hands in the West Meath.
But that's the thing, Senan. Number one, they're not going to Croke Park with these proposals. Number two, if Croke Park give them $1 million, can you trust them to spend it properly?
Have to go with your business. Say, here's my strength and coaching. Here's our commercial manager. Here's it, and they're not going to give them money otherwise.
Yeah.
The template has to be there. Now it's there's a lot of volunteerism, as we know, in other counties. In Dublin, they're pros. There's guys being paid by the county board to actually do this.
Yeah,
as we know.
And I think it needs to be pointed out, you know, we'll leave it at that, but I think it needs to be pointed out, this is not anti-Dublin or nonsense like that. It's in the interest of the Leinster Championship. And I honestly think this is maybe this Dublin team will prove to be one of the best teams in the history of the game. There's no doubt about that.
And it's not because of money.
No.
Is this team successful?
Yeah.
The money is why it will sustain over the next couple of decades.
Yeah, exactly. And that will sustain it. And it's almost like the other counties in Leinster need a bit of help here. And it's not a matter of, I support my own team. Just, you know, they need a bit of help and they need a bit of direction. Dublin have it, and it's nobody's fault in Dublin for winning. But like, I mean, in the interest of having some bit of entertainment in Leinster Championship, you know, maybe they might look at changing things around.
Fully agree.
All right, up next we'll analyse Galway and Roscommon. Yeah, lads, Galway 3-16, Roscommon 14 points. Fancied Galway before the game, maybe not by the large margin
that
But one thing jumped out at me, I watched the game back this morning, is how much both managers, you know, after all the criticism that they faced, they conceded kickouts last week, they retreated back into their halves. Like, Mickey Hart has got a vision for his team, and that's not going to be swayed by any criticism. It's almost like both managers took this criticism too much on board and they went for it. You know, Roscommon pushed up and kick out, so did Galway, and that's great to see. But that's Roscommon. Galway ended up, because Roscommon pushed up and kick outs, they went long to midfield, dominated the midfield sector. When they caught the ball in midfield, they're turning around. Comer has one-on-ones, Danny Cummins has one-on-ones, and they tore Roscommon apart. Absolutely tore them apart and played some beautiful football. But so, like, Roscommon, I suppose, contributed to that in a small way as well.
That's what happens when you listen to us, Egypt.
But Kevin Walsh might listen to us as well, so like, I'm looking on the right side of this.
But it begs the question, you know, there's Roscommon opening up, and look at the results. Like, not only from a performance point of view, it was pretty foolish to do that, like, and lose a Connacht final as a result. But
no, it's foolish, Conan, when you're very poor in midfield. Like, Roscommon do not have a midfield.
They don't have a midfield, yeah.
So, you know, them pushing up and forcing Galway to go long.
Yeah.
Like, they're nearly better off continue what they did and allow it go to the corner back.
And have to work to a lot of hands to get anywhere.
Because they're weak in midfield and Galway are especially good in midfield. And, like, that was the winning, for me,
you said it.
Look, that was the winning and losing of the game.
Yeah, well, I don't want to sound like some fanboy for a defensive system, but, you know, you look at the criticism the Ulster final took, because there were two teams afraid to lose a final and they wanted to make sure that they weren't stupid about it, which is exactly what Roscommon were. And then you look at that match, sort of went by with a whimper then, obviously not in Galway, but no one was talking about it. One team
opened up
and bent over.
Yeah, now the Connacht final was criticised last week too for being a...
But that's what I'm saying, and this is nearly sort of opposite, and this is what they got. This is what people wanted, is it? You know, somebody opening up and then just the game going by.
Well, I think if you're pushing up on a kick out against the team that has a really big midfield and you're forcing them to go to the midfield where you have the disadvantage. You know, my criticism last week was more of Galway because they're the stronger midfield. I was like, ask Kevin, why did you give away the kick outs to the two corner backs when you had that advantage of midfield? You know, so he corrected that, and like, Galway were a different team and they were able to play that long kick pass, and like, you have to say they played some beautiful football.
It was amazing. They were sharp, obviously, went in possession. I know this the transition word as well, but honestly, the kick passing was outrageous. Gary Soyce off the outside of his left boot for Danny Cummins' Danny Cummins' second goal. For me, that just sums up everything, that the good and the great about Gaelic football, that when it's not a defensive system, outside the left, it's not a high looping ball. Danny Cummins is onto it, roofs it, or puts it to the bottom corner. And because there was no real defensive system in play, we were afforded that sort of level of football and those sort of classy players. Your Danny Cummins is coming into scoring two crackers. He wouldn't be able to do that in Ulster, I can't imagine.
Outside
of
the left, outside of the right.
Amazing.
Both in the both opposite corners of the goal. Yeah. Like, that was just... This fella is a player that I wasn't sold on this lad. I thought that he was a bit of a headless chicken. He was incredibly fast.
Yeah. Sort of flashy.
Always out in front of his man.
Dermot Curry.
Yeah, but maybe, no, not even. He's like a live wire, but good things didn't all. Like, he was a 50-50. He'd mess up one, he'd do something nice. You couldn't trust him when it went in. So I was like, he's a brilliant man to get in front, but I'm like, I need a bit more from that fella. Yeah. But like, you're getting that bit more now. So not only have you got that brilliant movement and that speed to win the ball, he's starting to finish off moves, you know, so he's turned into a real threat.
I mean, but a lot of that's probably coming from the forward line that they've got assembled there. I mean, six of them are deadly. Like, in hindsight, it's foolish to open up on any of them and leave anybody one-on-one. I mean, some of those scores, it was just all you had to do was take a pass one man and you had a free shot.
Yeah.
This lad, Brannigan, the young fellow.
Oh, it's class.
Pasty burning.
Comer is this guy's a bear in the square.
I said on Thursday, he's my new favourite player. He's a wrecking ball.
He's a wrecking ball, yeah.
And his dummy solo for that point, you know, it wasn't really, it was a dummy solo as in, I'm going to keep running with a dummy solo, not as in, I'm going to sell you. Like, Michael Murphy does it brilliantly. Yeah. Like, he's coming around the outside and he feigns to shoot, but just taps it back up and continues on.
Yeah,
you know, he's not cutting back the opposite way.
Or shipping it off.
And when you see that, it's absolutely beautiful, but... You know, Galway do have those forwards, like you said, and Gary Sykes, his goal, like mine, He got that ball out in the sideline. I'd love to have done a bit of analysis on this. There was no goal on here. He had his wing back goal side of him. Yeah. He was out on the sideline. He's not blessed with pace. He's only got a left foot, so he's
the man knew he was going left.
There's so much wrong with the defending for that goal. Like you could list about seven different mistakes in defending, in basic under 12 defending that Roscommon made.
Yeah. And then the finish. The finish alone, it was outrageous. Yeah, but that would look. We go back to Galway football, and it's great to see because they're going against the grain here, I suppose, a little bit. They're going to come up against different, stronger sort of organised defences. I think when they get out, we talk about the guy with the Party Joyces, you know, the fellas we played against, the Jaff Fallon. So it's great to see that level of football being played in this Galway team still, Woolly. You know that way. It's just what we associate with Galway football, that they've bought into a very organised defensive system. They track runners, they do cover space. But I love that slick counter attacking play. And what I loved about Danny Cummins' first goal was he smelled danger. The ball that came in, he was already making the run. It mightn't have broke his way. I think it broke away and it was a fist pass across. But the break could have gone the other way and his run was nullified, I suppose. But he was there. He was on it. They're sharp, they're incisive, and they have a belief. And Kevin Walsh, fair play. Fiontaine O'Curry gone, Micheál Lundy gone.
Lundy, I thought, was a big loss.
Johnny Dwan, the cornerback, gone. And they can win a Connacht title. Where are those lads? Are they sitting in America now?
Jesus. They're crying. Jesus. Yeah. But another thing that came out during January was that 50 players turned.
Didn't.
That's nonsense.
Ludicrous.
I don't believe that for number one. Like, how many players did Kevin Walsh actually ask in for 50 to turn down? Yeah. Like 1,000. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy talk, and there's no way there was 50. And even if there was 50, there would have been fellas from junior clubs, and you know that you see all these lads being asked into panels, and they've no real interest in giving that commitment.
Well, I know a few counties that do have, I don't know if it's 50 exactly, but they have a lot of people in their squad.
And Derry.
Well, like a large part of that is the under 21s, you know, coming in the train, and like, you know, they have these lads on strength and conditioning programs, and like, you know, as I say, a few different counties. But
it's Derry, you know.
But like, it's nearly like I think Mikey Stafford wrote that piece in Sports View. It was like nearly a hoovering up process where they don't want people to leave, so they've sort of brought them in with this promise that, you know, you're on our books to be a county player in the future. And you can nearly see the sense in it.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be interesting enough, actually, to see how Galway get on when they play a Donegal or play a Tyrone, that when they win that ball in midfield, they're turning and that kick pass isn't on. You know, then they have to all roll with the punches and work through the hands, and that brilliant game plan is gone. And, you know, that's the test, because Roscommon made it very, very easy for them. Really did.
You said it. There was momentum in everything Galway did yesterday, and what are good teams, good defensive structures, are about breaking momentum. And we all know we played, all of a sudden you're looking over your shoulder for the second phase ball, it's slow, it's lateral, it doesn't work. You know, that's where Galway are going to, I suppose, come up, and that's the conundrum for them. But they have plenty of time to work on this, Woolly, you know?
Yeah, they do. They can get the...
You look at it, in the quarterfinals, they're either going to be playing Derry or Tipperary or Clare. I mean, they'll be licking their lips at that now. Yeah, well. I mean, all of a sudden, they could be in a semi-final.
I don't think they're on the top level, though, lads, are they? No. I don't think they're going to be beaten. I don't think they're going to be beaten Kerry or a Dublin.
I can't see it. They're a strange sort of team.
They beaten Mayo, I suppose. Yeah, but it was an off-colour Mayo.
They gave Kerry a bit of a run a couple of years ago. Remember Tom Flynn going on a run through? But yeah, maybe they just caught Kerry unawares. Oh, look, people are going to step up. Now, they're Connacht champions at the end of the day. They've beaten Mayo. They've beaten Roscommon after a replay. To take them seriously, they have a lovely spine in that team. When you look at Paul Connor there, Gary O'Donnell, Shane Walsh centre forward, and then in Horns, they just have a fantastic spine in the team. They've runners left, right and centre. It's this for them, I suppose. It's the systems that they're going to come up against. That's the conundrum for them.
I just like that forward line too, when you have so much threat and six people. It's dangerous. I mean, it's at all that age, a puncher always has a chance. And I remember going to some Derry games where you're thinking we're well out of this, but you still had boys like Paddy and Owen Bradley and Mark Lynch that could just win a game out of nowhere. You'll never win a championship, but you always have a chance.
And like I heard on the Marty squad yesterday, you know, now Galway, when they go of Connacht, they're a different animal when they go
they're out of Connacht in the first round.
Alright, up next we're going to have a look at a few of the qualifier games. We usually do a performance of the weekend in this slot, but after Sean Kavanagh's performance, like, there's no suspense there whatsoever. So we'll give Sean Kavanagh the performance of the weekend, and you will be getting a GAA Hour mug, Sean, when we get around to making these mugs. But the qualifier draw was drawn this morning, and might as well tell you what it was. In Group 4A, number one, I hate these Group A and B. Oh,
I can't hack it. I give up. Don't say it to me. I don't want to know.
I'll
get to the qualifying and see who's there.
Yeah. What was wrong with just the, yes, all the teams in this section and the beaten teams out of this final?
Listen, I don't know what it's for. Maybe as a doubler, it doesn't matter as much, but the way it's panned out, it's great. As a Derryman, I love this A and B thing at the moment.
But no, I know what it's for. It's so the teams don't have to play the week after. There's a logic behind it. It's just so
it's so sound confused. Yeah.
I hate it. But anyways, here's the draw this morning, and this is for Group 4A. Roscommon play Clare and Tipperary play Derry, and in Group 4B, Westmeath play Mayo and Donegal play Cork. So the Roscommon, Clare, Tipperary, Derry matches are obviously next weekend, and then the Westmeath, Mayo, Donegal, Cork, they're the following weekend of July 30th, 31st. Speaking of Cork, we sent our chief sports writer Dion Fanning to Pierce Park, and he spoke to manager Pat O'Healy after the game. He started off by asking what was said at halftime to inspire such a massive turnaround in the second half.
Let's be honest, I think that the players led it at halftime. Very little for me to say at halftime. The players knew they weren't performing at halftime. Look, let's be honest, we had 8 wides in the first half, and again, it's a coming in at halftime, and we're losing by 4, down by 4. And if we're going to go forward in this competition, we're going to have to give better first half performance, because we seem to be struggling in the first half. But then, look, the players came out in the second half, and then Paddy Kelly in particular had a real solid game in the second half. He took control of the second half and control of the forwards in the second half, and just everything, every time he touched the ball, we seemed to get a score from it.
And was there some anger when O'Driscoll was taken off in the first half?
No, I suppose he was frustrated, of course, but look, that's only natural, and expect that from players, but there was certainly no anger. But like, he was fine there after we spoke, and Brian is a team player, and that's for sure, he wants to win, and nobody likes being bought off, and there's fellas that haven't been brought on today, and I'm sure they're not happy either, and there won't be fellas happy next week, because they know that everything's up for grabs again for the next game, so and that's the way it has to be.
It turned out to be a routine enough win for Cork in the end. But the most interesting thing, and I was hearing the radio coverage of it, and David Brady said that when Brian O'Driscoll was coming off the field, he pushed Pat O'Healy with both hands coming off. Now, you know, Dion asked Healy about it, who admitted that he was angry and disappointed the way he came off. But like, I mean, you could almost count Cork out of the championship this year if
that's
like that. I don't care if it's just an isolated incident. If there's respect for a manager, you just don't do something like that. And if that happens, it's not a good sign for a team.
Well, does the collective respect for a manager is there, and if you step outside, the players will be onto you as well. So obviously, he felt that it was okay to do this. That the respect, even as I said, it's a collective respect. You can't imagine any player doing that to Jim Gavin. If anyone did it, they'd be. Probably the players that heave hold him off the panel, because it just sends out the wrong message.
Sends
you said it.
If
that's what's going on in Cork, they're on quicksand.
One thing about that, though, and it got me thinking about this new thing that's in the GAA of managers, when you're coming off, to come over and shake your hand. There's no need for that.
Did you ever get that?
No, but
no, you weren't taken off.
I listen. If I was taken off, a manager would know to stay well away from me. Now I know the game has changed and it's a squad game. So when you come off, it's not always because
you're
playing
badly.
It could
be tactical. Yeah.
But don't shake the player's hand. Leave him alone. Let him go off. Let him sit
and
on the
sulk
bench
on his own.
Because it's only fueling, the possibility of a flare up. You know, a player's disappointed. He might not want to shake your hand. He might be annoyed with you. He might be annoyed with himself. You know, he's let himself down if he's played badly. Leave him off.
Yeah.
This big handshake, and it's all for, I think, managers' egos. And look at the, maybe not egos, but it's trying to put up this thing. Look how we're all in it together.
Exactly.
Putting the player in a difficult position who's just had a massive disappointment in his career.
Yeah, would you run past, if everybody else is shaking the hand, head down, would you run past?
I would not. If
the hand came out, you'd put the head down and keep going. Yeah,
I do one of these things where you push, you fix your head.
Like the kids, yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't think. Okay. I don't think it's unnecessary. But obviously, Brian O'Driscoll, if 100% he pushed Pat O'Healy, which is what was reported. Like, I mean, you know, he needs to be gone off the panel immediately. And if he's not, you'd have to wonder what kind of strength of character Pat O'Healy has.
Mm. Well, on the flip side, it's tough to find a flip side here. But my experience is a lot different to you lads. Like, you know, intermediate club footballer. But I remember we had such a bad season. We were losing to teams we should never be losing to. Like, I'm from the city in Derry, so we have a big enough sort of pool there. And one night the manager just organised a barbecue. And it's infamous in the club now. Like, you know, what happened at the end of the barbecue? Everyone just beat the head off each other. Like, you know, the manager included. And like, I remember waking up the next day thinking, oh, gee, like, you know, what's going to happen here now?
Ah, the air was clear.
Air was clear. We came back down the training that next night, and it was brilliant, crack. Mm. Everyone was chatting about who battered who. Yeah. Why did he punch him? And he was outside his house at 3 a.m. screaming for him. And like, we ended up getting promoted for the first time ever that season. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying it's completely different on the pitch and stuff, but
he actually are mad up there. It's not just rumors. Yeah.
What happened was puts his team behind the ball, and then the rest was just No, but maybe stuff like that. If I was the manager, it would be dropped. Like, you know, I would.
But that was too public. You see, squads, and the amount and of arguments I've seen
that never break outside the changing room, as you know,
that never happens. But in public, like, I mean, you see players falling out in training. You see them falling out in nights out. You see all.
Club games kicking the lard out of each other.
Yeah, you know? But like, I mean, I suppose dissing your manager in public like that is hard to find any kind of. Now, another thing was he was taken off at about 30 seconds to go in the first half. That was unnecessary. Yeah, give him the half time to sit down and not be humiliated like that. Like, that, you know, there's a couple of things. Taking a fella off with 30 seconds to go, I think you're trying to send out a statement, but very unfair on the player. Let him have the dignity of being taken off at half time. Sneaking out into the dugout, and a lot of people might not even notice that he's gone.
You can put on a limp and stuff then as well, like, you know, at half time, pretend like he's injured and stuff, you know, stuff like that's important for
you. Don't want to be taken out in the first half. No, you just at any stage in your career, that's under 10 stuff. We'd play with, we'd 15 players, but we're actually going to play with 14 here and leave you on the line, okay? That's the sort of thing we don't need. No.
Right, okay.
What about Pat Kelly? Pat Kelly back. That's good for
Pat
Cork,
Kelly, he's a very good player, clever player.
Yeah. Good
and,
to,
and Colin O'Neill coming on at half time, but like, I don't know. Cork are just Cork, on the slide. They're in nowhere near the top teams. It's unfortunate, but I don't know. We could nearly do a full Cork special. We might leave that for Red FM or somebody like that. Right, Colin, you're jumping out, and Mikey Stafford, our regular hurling guy, is jumping in because he was up in McHale Park watching the Green and Red of Mayo. Senan, you were there in the comfort of Sky Studios. Yep. Mikey, you were cooped up in the press box.
The little UFO on top of the stand there, yeah.
Yeah, way away from the action. You weren't getting as much money as Senan either, but...
I'm just doing it on my holidays for free.
What did you make of this one?
It was Mayo had it. They wrapped it up with, they scored 2-3 before the just before half time, and the second half was, it just seemed like they were kind of saving themselves, really. You know, they've got 2 weeks now, and Aidan O'Shea played fullback for a little while. Another Natty was a second sweeper. He had his hands on his hip for quite a lot of the second half. It seemed to be they were conserving energy, so it was a job well done. Afterwards, I spoke to Mayo captain Keith Higgins and to Keane O'Neill, who obviously spent some time in the backroom team up in Mayo, and he's very complimentary of the Mayo men anyway.
Definitely the Galway game, you know, there had to be anger coming from that game. We didn't do ourselves just, we didn't do the county justice that day up here against Galway. So, you know, we spoke about it after the game, there had to be that bit of anger, there had to be a reaction, and, you know, hopefully that will keep coming out of us.
Yeah, and then after, you know, the Fermanagh game to today, there's a, you know, incremental improvement every day. You know, the qualifiers is not a route often taken by Mayo, but do you think it could actually be the making of this team?
Look, people have said since we lost to Galway, you know, maybe it's a good thing we're going on this route, but as I keep saying, it's the only choice we have. We have to go down this route. So, you know, if we keep winning, people say it's the making of us. If we lose, people say we should have won the Connacht title, you know. So, look, so we just have to do what we have to do to win games.
Was it a blow to your egos to lose that match to Galway, you know, to not be Connacht champions anymore? You know, you're getting fairly used to it.
Definitely a blow. I don't know if it was a blow to the egos or not, but yeah, it's definitely a blow. It's, you know, you lose a Connacht championship game against one of your biggest rivals in your home patch. It has to be a blow, and like I said, you know, we just have to get a reaction out of that, and hopefully that'll keep coming.
Mayo are only getting started, believe you me. Mayo are only getting started. They're improving every single game, you know, and you can see even today there was an element of slickness and fluidity, particularly to their counter-attacking play. Most of the time off our errors, granted, but even when they were kicking short kickouts, they were moving the ball with a lot more efficiency than last week. And we knew they were going to have a big performance. We knew there'd be a big push from their supporters because they're fantastic up here. We just weren't able to contain it at times, and it just shows we're a bit off it. If you look at the matches we played this year, Division 3 matches, we played Wexford, we played Westmeath, performed well against Offaly yesterday, and when you meet a top tier team moving as well as they did at times, it is a different league.
Yeah, that was Keane O'Neill, Kildare manager, talking about Mayo, and it's like that was one of the most honest assessments of Mayo where they're at, and it was from the opposition manager. He says that Mayo are back, you know, which I thought looking at the game, and I don't want to analyse the second half because the game was over at half time.
Absolutely.
It's the same as the Roscommon Galway game. You can't analyse second halves of those type games. damage was done in the first half when the game was a contest. And then forget about, I'm not interested in that, because Mayo had the game was won.
Yeah,
it was pedestrian.
A couple of things that I thought were really impressive about Mayo. Andy Moran, full forward target man. Jeez. Beautiful.
And he became the fulcrum, didn't he, Willie, in that first half? Everything around him.
First 3 points came off.
Yeah. And his energy in there, yeah.
And you don't have to be a Kieran Donaghy big man to be a target man. A target man, in my head, is a fella who's out in front, who's giving you, when you look up, there's that easy
ball. That option is there. And tread it into him. Perfect.
Now, whether he'll get that space against other teams is another story. Mm. But the movement was so good that Kildare tried to have Morgan O'Flaherty back, but it didn't really work. Mayo, I thought, were really, really good when they needed to be really, really good.
It was the three of them as well. It was Regan, it was Moran, and it was Killian O'Connor. The three of them were going in opposite directions.
Yeah, they were going in opposite directions.
It's very difficult for a sweeper to cover three men.
Yeah, and I think O'Regan as well in that. First of all, they did exactly what I said on television before. They expected an energy and an organisation from Mayo from the get-go. Let's show us something here. And we saw that. They went into a 5-1 lead, and then they took the foot off the gas a little bit and they allowed Kildare back into it. But what we saw from Evan O'Regan, that he looks like a quality forward now. I think 1-4 from play.
Yeah. You know,
he's offering something a little bit different now. That it's not all on Killian O'Connor anymore. But Andy Moore, maybe he's just a different sort of guy that can stay out of trouble.
O'Connor now, Dermot yes, was unbelievable. His first 2 points were two of the prettiest points you'll ever see. Yeah. They were just beautiful. He's 1-5 from wing forward off the plays. It's just a serious haul.
James Horne called him Superman at half time on Sky.
He's in
the same brackets as the Flynns and the Connollys, and he's in the same bracket physically. He's a match for them, you know.
But he's only he's still under 21.
Very young, yeah. But he's got the pace. He's an awesome, awesome player, and he's another string to the bow. One thing about Mayo, and Peter Canavan and Tomás O'Shea both highlighted Kevin McLaughlin as a sweeper. I'm not sold on this fella as a sweeper, and I'll tell you exactly why I'm not sold on him. Sweeper, in my opinion, has three functions, right? Number one, cover off space, don't allow ball come in. His ability to read where those balls are going is terrible.
Yeah.
He usually stays right in the middle.
He doesn't have any instinct
of where it's going. Now, I know that's much more difficult in the modern game because there's diagonal balls, but you can still read a diagonal ball. There's usually one on the full forward line that needs to be covered more than another, and he's just in the middle of the two. Number two, if the ball actually does go in, you have to make yourself the extra man and double up and create turnovers. He's too lazy for that. He's too used to playing in forwards, in my opinion. He doesn't do that enough. There's two huge functions as a sweeper that he's fallen down on badly. Third function of a sweeper is to be the extra man and break forward when
offensively, when that happens. Yeah.
He's brilliant at that. He's really good at that. But one out of three isn't good enough for me. Mm. One out of three, he's missing out on two major functions of a sweeper. The knock-on effect of that is when he's back there, Mayo are giving up a player in the other end of the field. So they have a man over in midfield in the middle third. They're able to pick out nicer ball, bypass him, and it just doesn't work. Sweepers work better when you actually play defensively and swarm the middle third.
Yeah.
Mayo don't swarm the middle third. They're just using a sweeper, and it's almost like for the sake of it. It's not working. Mm. Put him back up wing forward and stop this nonsense.
I actually thought he didn't have a bad game,
He had a decent game, but if you're just looking on, you'll see him running up the field and giving a couple of good balls in.
I thought he was getting in a good few tackles, and I thought there was... I didn't know how much ball were Kildare actually kicking in, because everything was coming from midfield with Feely and Moolick, so they were running. And I thought he was usually the second man on the spot for a tackle.
Yeah, we were sort of highlighting him there.
Honestly, he wasn't, because I actually specifically watched that game for this in mind.
Yeah, and I have to agree, he just played literally on the D. He looked like he was caught in two minds. He didn't know whether, like, it was obvious the balls were coming down the flanks, but he wasn't making that shift left or right. Now, if he was playing the Colm Kavanagh role where he stays in the D and you're not scoring goals, I'd say fair enough. You know the way he just stays there and everybody else sort of does their work. They're busy around him. He doesn't need to go left or right. But Kevin's not offering that, and you said it, offensively I'm not so sure either, because Morgan O'Flaherty did a better job offensively. What he was actually doing was, this was class, and we didn't get a chance to highlight it, he was stepping up on the Mayo kick out, so he'd run all the way up onto Kevin McLaughlin, and as soon as the ball was in the air, he was gone 60 yards back down the park and stepped in as a sweeper.
And the Mayo kickouts put an awful lot of pressure on the Mayo kickouts,
and it was just a tactic, and that's great for Keane O'Neill going forward as well. But look, I think you were right now, Woolley, against the better teams in Croke Park, there's a lot of green grass to cover there, and if you have a good kicking team, a Kerry or a Dublin, that
Kerry or Dublin playing a three man full forward line, McLaughlin will be completely at sea in that, it doesn't make any sense. Another thing as well, just to move off that before we finish, is Aidan O'Shea was at full back for a lot of that.
What's that about?
What is going on there?
That's
you can say they're messing him around, and I almost say they are messing him around, But like, I mean, if Feely goes into full forward line and Aidan has to follow him in, that these things happen throughout a game. Mm. But if that's happening for more than 5 minutes, you're making a switch to get Aidan O'Shea back out around midfield. Like, you don't allow that to carry on.
He was full back for about 5 minutes and then he was a second sweeper. He was standing beside McLaughlin, and you know yourself, the second half, there wasn't much call for a second sweeper in the Mayo defence. And honestly, it seemed like it was just kind of conserving energy. It really seemed like that was a tactic, I thought.
Because he's not going to get the... No, Aidan O'Shea's not going to get the ball and go 1-2 up the park. He's not going to burn 60 yards of green grass in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
He's going to try and kick it. Sweet. No, forget about it. He's not going to be back there ever again. If he crossed that line at 45 minutes, where do you... Get back up there, you.
Yeah. But it's like this in-game management that I kind of criticise Mayo for. They're so close. But like, I mean, if they leave Aidan O'Shea in at full back against Dublin, like, you mean you've lost 5-10 minutes there of, like, you have to be snappy about that.
Your best
midfielder, your best worker, your best like everything all rounder, and you're letting him stay in on full back. Yeah. That's not a good sign.
I'd agree with you. Yeah, 100%. That's just not being organised, not relaying a message. But as you said, the game is over. Maybe they're just letting it lie at that stage. Subs it all on in. You'd hope.
Yeah, all right. That went a little bit over time. Hope you're all still listening to us. I don't think we'll get as busy a weekend. 3 provincial championships and 4 qualifiers, all to be squeezed in to a GAA hour. So we're about up to about what, Mikey? GAA hour and a half, maybe?
Maybe. It's a little bit of added extra.
30 minutes extra we've given you, and it's all free of charge.
We're so
that's
generous.
The great thing about it. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks to Conan, Mikey, Dion and Evan for putting the show together. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GEA. And again, don't forget to subscribe to the GEA Hour on iTunes. Just search the GEA Hour, rate us, like us, whatever you do on iTunes. I'm not too sure. See you next week. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.